Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Gino Galli, 17 years of combination experience, second-generation firefighter, a captain on Engine 18 with Caldwell Fire Department in Idaho, president with Treasure Valley Fools, and creator of March Mayhem Fire Conference. Gino got his start as a reserve firefighter for Sacramento City with the dream goal of becoming a firefighter with Cal Fire. Once he was eligible, Gino began applying anywhere he could to get a full-time career position. That prayer was answered when he got hired with Sacramento, but Gino began to realize he wasn't truly being fulfilled being just a number in such a large department and started seeking other avenues. Gino adds that there are no ill feelings toward his former organization, but sometimes you as the individual need to find a place where you feel like you can make a difference and leave a positive mark within the service. With that, I present Gino Galli.
Cool. So my name is Gino Galli. I am a fire captain with the Caldwell Fire Department. I've been in the fire service combination about 17 years of full-time and volunteer experience. I am currently the president of the Treasure Valley Fools. I am also the director and creator of the March Mayhem Fire Conference here in the Boise region of Idaho. We just had our fourth conference, and it's just spreading every year. I'm married to my beautiful wife of 9 years. We have one beautiful daughter, Gemma, who just turned 5. And she's my mini-me, and she also helps me plan the conference as well. So we call her a little mini mayhem. But besides that, you know, I just love training, having fun, and glad to be here.
All right, man. I appreciate you coming on. For the listeners, how did you get into the fire service?
Yeah, so I started as a reserve. Well, it was basically a reserve program for Sacramento City Fire Department back in 2008. And so what we did there was we'd learn how to, you know, put on our turnout gear, how to, you know, throw on SCBA. We helped with any sec alarm, working structure fires, any level 3 hazmat calls, water rescues. So we were basically like a 5-star roach coach is what we'd like to call it. Is we had a food truck that was designed for incidents that had for rehab. So we were a rehab unit. So we had, you know, water, granola bars, coffee, stuff like that. And after a while, I decided, you know, I actually want to run calls. And so I found a small volunteer department, one station department, and just outside Sacramento. And I started going up there. I got all my certs through them, went through the academy and all that. And then I found, you know, I wanted to work for Cal Fire. Everyone knew Cal Fire in California is the largest fire department, right? It's one of the largest out there, and they're all risks. So you got to run structural fires, vehicle accidents, grass fires. So I started to look into them a little bit more to become a seasonal. And I found a volunteer Cal Fire station down the street from my house. So I ended up going there. And I got all my wildland certifications from them. And then I started to volunteer, run calls, be a paid call, kind of firefighter for them. And at that time, that's when I got picked up as a seasonal with Cal Fire. I worked 3 seasons with Cal Fire in Mendocino. I worked on the coast. So it was kind of nice during the summertime. It was 100 degrees inland. We were out there. It was 50 degrees and foggy. So it was, You hear the ocean waves at night. It was fantastic. I worked with a great captain who's a good friend of mine and a mentor of mine up till he retired. And then after that, I knew this is what I want to do full time. So I went to paramedic school, started doing paramedic school. I was testing all over the place. I think I tested 5 different states, over 100 different departments, you know, just trying to get out there, get that experience on the interview, the testing, the whole 9 yards that a lot of people, you know. Right now, some people will test, get hired the first job. Mm-hmm. For me, it wasn't that easy. So I tested and tested and tested. And finally, when I was in paramedic school, I actually got hired with Sacramento City Fire Department. Worked there for a few years and then decided this large department, it was a great department. It was busy. You got to run a lot of fires, a lot of calls. The problem for me was I couldn't make a difference. I felt like I was just a number. And so I couldn't make the difference in the department. And at the time, we were kind of looking, I would go to Idaho every year for a bowling tournament with my dad. And I fell in love with Boise for years, and at the time, me and my wife, we just got married, we had no kids. We're like, hey, let's take a chance. She got a job offer out in Idaho, and so I was like, well, I'll look out there. I applied to multiple departments. I applied to Frank's department and Caldwell, and Caldwell called me first and offered me the job, and been there ever since. And I moved up the ranks from firefighter to engineer all the way up to captain currently.
You don't hear very many people say they get onto a huge municipality like Sacramento, and then I'm going to leave to go somewhere smaller. But I like your reasoning behind it because you're just like, I'm not really going to make a difference in a sense. And I get it. I mean, like,
Right.
what's their manpower pool at Sacramento?
There's about 600 at the time when I left it. I mean, we
Okay.
had 4-person engines, 4-person trucks. We ran, we're a fire base EMS, so we had ambulance as well. There's 21 stations. We were 100,000 calls a year, so they're definitely saturated with calls. The problem was when I grew up. So my dad was a firefighter. When I grew up is. I grew up around the firehouse, right? I used to go hang out with him on weekends, and then at the same time, we'd go out with all of his coworkers and their families, and go camping and have family events, right? It was more a family atmosphere. That's how the fire service was for a long time. At Sacramento, if you weren't in certain cliques, then you're kind of like the outcast, right? Like if one person didn't like you, a lot of people don't like you. And my problem with me, and a lot of people can contest this, is I like to talk. Sometimes I'll put my foot in my mouth. It happens. But at the same time, I'm also not afraid to tell people how I think and how I feel. And so I'm not the type of person that will go behind your back and say, you're POS. I'll tell you to your face. So it rubbed a lot of people wrong. And so in turn, I didn't hang out a lot of people outside that I worked with. A lot of academy mates I talked to here and there, but we rarely hung out. And so it wasn't that family atmosphere, but at the same time, it's like, I want to train, I want to learn, but I'm only learning this way, right? And I couldn't learn, there's 100 different ways to skin a cat. And so it, at the end of the day, it was just affecting me mentally, emotionally. And I was like, all right, I need a difference. I need to make a change. I'm still young. Let's go find something different. Some big departments, like every department has their issues, right? And
Yes.
Bigger department, probably the bigger issues. But at the end of the day, it's a big city department is not for everybody. A little city, a little one station department is not for everybody. And so you kind of got to look around and see what works best for you. And so I did that, and I probably made the best decision of my life.
Okay. With that being said, two questions. First one, you mentioned your dad's a firefighter, so that are you second generation? Okay. All right. Where did your dad work at?
In the Bay Area in Fairfield.
Okay.
So halfway between Sacramento and San Francisco, California.
Gotcha. Okay. And my second question to you, can you tell the guests, including myself, a little bit about Caldwell, the size, personnel, stations, roughly, things like that?
So Caldwell is one of top 10 fastest growing cities in the nation. Currently we just opened a fourth station in our rural area, Station 18. So our numbers aren't the normal Station 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, right? Our neighbor agency, NAMPA Fire, which previous guest Frank Beauvais works at, they are stations 1 through 6. And so originally, for the longest time, we had 3-digit numbers. So Engine 101, Engine 102, Engine 103, stuff like that. We changed when we got new chiefs to where we kind of want to be coincide with them, with NAMPA, to where eventually, so when we're on the same incidents, we don't have the same numbers. So our IC is not saying, hey, engine one, like, well, which one? So our station one is engine 11, truck 11. Station two is engine 12, squad 12. Station three is engine 13. So we have four stations. We run 3 engines, one truck, and or sorry, 4 engines if we're fully staffed. And that's if we're not fully staffed with captains, then the fourth engine drops down to a 2-person squad, and they run medicals out of Station 18. and fires and whatnot. So we run about 8,500 calls a year between the four stations, technically three stations because we just opened the fourth like a month ago, a month and a half ago. So about 8,500 calls. We used to average working structure fire every 3 days. So we're pretty busy. We're known in the valley as Little Detroit. The calls we go on, we have a lot of violent calls, you could say, you know, anywhere from domestic to gang to fights to shootings to stabbings, as well as car accidents. And we still see our good fair share of fires. Not on my shift, C shift, for some reason, we just can't catch fire to save our life. But A and B shift, they get them quite often. And we cover 142 square miles between the four stations.
Damn.
So, yeah, before it was just three stations, we'd cover the same amount. So our station one would cover where station 18 is now. And it'd take 20 minutes to get to a call. So, and we do auto aid with neighboring departments. And so it's, we use AVL now, advanced vehicle location, to where, you know, closest unit. So not every, before every station in our department would go to the fire. Now it's first come, first serve, whoever's closer.
Okay. With your fourth station, just I'm only asking why wasn't it dubbed Engine 14?
So it started, it was a reserve station, or volunteer station many, many years ago. It's called Notice. It's a little town called Notice. It's, so our city contracts with the rural fire district. So, sorry, the rural fire district contracts with the city. So they give us a certain amount of money to basically cover their areas. They say, you know what, we want to start staffing the station again. Well, when it was Notice, it was station eight. And so when we had it for the longest time, it was basically a storage unit for us. We run our Region 3 hazmat team. We used to keep all the hazmat rigs out there. So they kept it as, well, it was station eight. Let's just keep it station eight. And we'll just call it Engine 18, Water Tender 18, Squad 18. It's a big wildland area because it's all farmland. We call it the ranch because you're basically middle of nowhere. You're by yourself for a long time. It's a lot of cowboy stuff. And so when we're not fully staffed, so it's a normally a three-person engine. If we're fully staffed, every captain's on duty. If any captain's off, then I float around because I'm the less senior captain on our shift. And then so I go fill in for those engines. And in turn, we drop the engine off and we have a two-person squad with a driver and a firefighter. And then
Okay.
they run calls with that. But
Okay. All right.
yeah, we have
And
station four. We have station four being built. It'll be done early spring of 2027. And then they have land for station five, six, and seven,
oh,
from
wow.
what I understand. Yeah, so they're we're rapidly growing. When I started in 2018, we had 39 firefighters online. Right now, we have 62. So we're growing pretty quick.
Okay. With the exception of that station, the other three stations, what's your minimum staffing levels on the apparatus?
Every engine minimum is the three. Truck, no less than four at
Okay.
all times. So, yeah, we have one BC, and then each engine, we could have up to a minimum of three.
Okay. And ALS, BLS, do you guys do transport?
We do not do transport yet. So we work with Caney County Paramedics. They're going through some funding issues right now with levies, trying to pass, they just passed a temporary levy, but it's temporary. A lot of people don't like the permanent stuff out here. A lot of people don't like getting taxed extra out here. We're getting taxed like crazy on everything. And so it's, if they don't get long term, then we have to start looking at possibly maybe going that route of fire-based EMS. Our medical director, not a big fan of it, and so they're trying to avoid it at all costs, but down the road, who knows what's going to happen. So right now we are technically just a BLS department. We do have paramedics online as well, but we're so, you know, the paramedics are usually pretty quick behind us to where you can't really do a whole lot of ALS skills. But when they're on scene, you absolutely can. They'll let you, do IVs and all of our EMTs. We can do, we have modules for our EMT license. So just for being basic, you can still do an LMA, an IO, and IVs as well.
Okay. All
You just
right.
can't push meds.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. Definitely sounds like you guys are going through like a lot of departments growing pains. And with that also probably comes issues of promotions, promoting young and promoting often, along with hiring.
Big time. Yeah. So when I tested for a captain, we didn't have enough qualified people in our department, and we were hiring three captains. When I tested, I've never worked as a captain at all. I just got my Fire Officer One certification like a month before. But I go, you know what? I've been doing this for a long time. I want to see where I'm at. I'm going against, I heard we had a guy from LA City as a captain coming in who's there for a long time. A guy from San Diego who we hired as a firefighter. He was a captain in San Diego. He was testing with us internal. And we had a chief from Oregon. So I'm like, man, I'm going against these guys who have tons of experience. I've never won someone, but I'm going to give it all. So I studied and studied, and I called, friends of mine in the fire service, like Matt Doney, Jason Fulmer, to ask questions like, hey, what would you do in this situation? Well, how about this situation? And so I studied my ass off. I tested, and I got out of, I think, nine people that tested, we only had four that passed, and I was number four. And so we were only hiring three captains. Well, luckily, the guy who scored number three was the chief from Oregon, and we were hiring an admin chief, deputy chief at the time. And so they offered him that job instead. He took the chief job, which in turn let me get promoted. Well, fast forward a year later, he's now our current fire chief.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he just got sworn in 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
So it's kind of weird how things work out. But every time I see him, I just, hey, I know, you want to be a captain again, but thanks for taking the chief job because it got me promoted. And he always laughs. So no, it's pretty cool. But yeah, like with the growing, right, is we have a very young department. We have two-thirds of our department have been on less than 5 years. So when it comes to qualified people, we don't have a lot of them. So when I promoted, I looked at it. I still have 18 years left before I can even retire, consider retiring. And so I'm like, I'm going to be a captain for a long time, which could be a good thing and a bad thing at the same time, right? Is I'm still learning as I go, which is, that's if you're not learning, then you should probably not do the job anymore. But I'm still learning as I go on every call, every shift, I'm learning something. But at the same time, we have so many young guys that are basically being forced into step-up roles now that, they're not enjoying what I got to as a backseat firefighter.
Right.
And so I've been telling a lot of our young guys, if you don't want to do that position right now, do not even work on your step-up task book. Because as soon as you get that step-up qualification, you're going to be forced in that position. And that's what happened with me is I started stepping up as a driver. I did more driving than I did firefighting as a qualified firefighter, but I was a step-up driver. And so we have a lot of guys who have 2 years on, 1 year like as a firefighter, never have any experience before that, to where now they're being forced in these leadership roles, and it's tough. So we're currently doing a captain's test next month. We're looking at hiring five captains. We only have three that are eligible. So we're gonna have to open it up again for lateral captains as well, just to get qualified people. But then that's temporary because when we open station four in a year and a half, we're gonna have to hire three more captains, three more drivers, six more firefighters to fill. And we don't have enough qualified people. So people are getting forced into it.
Yeah. And that's one of the things too. I would imagine certain people will see a we're hiring ad on social media and it'll be like lateral driver, lateral captains. And then if you go through some of the comments, people are like, that's pretty sad that the department doesn't, let their own guys. But the case may be the individuals on that department already are like, listen, I'm not there yet. And so the department has no choice but to go outside. To me, it makes perfect sense. Like, I hate the fact that, or I dislike the fact that you have some members on your department that are like, all right, I'll do it, but when they do that, they miss the opportunity of what it's like being on the back step, getting that fire. And I understand department's got to do what they got to do. And I kind of see both sides, but to me, you're kind of hurting that individual a little bit because they never got to experience what it's like being a back step before moving up to drive and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. And like tomorrow, I'm working a trade for a guy, and he has four on his engine. One's a step up captain who hasn't had a lot of time as a step up, and we have an additional driver on there. So I'm gonna be like, hey, you want to sit in the captain seat this today? Also the back seat. I don't mind at all. And we'll see what he says. Most likely he'll say yes, but yeah, it's that the time in the back seat is to perfect your craft, right? Is to understand the basics of the job and to figure out what you like and go down that route. Working for many different types of departments, from big city, little city, volunteer to wildland, I got to see all different types of aspects of the job, right? And so it got me excited about the job. It got me, more pumped up and passionate about it. And that's what I'm trying to push on these guys. When I first started at Caldwell, man, our mentality, our culture was toxic. We had huge beef between our admin and our fire line guys that when I was there, it was wow. I was like, man, this kind of sucks. So it was up to me as a low firefighter to try and make change, right? And so me and two other guys who got hired as a fireman's first laterals, when we got hired, it was our goal to make culture better. And it rubbed off the guys who've been there for a year. And then that rubbed off the guys who've been there 2 years and 3 years, to where now our culture at our department, anyone that comes in feels like they're family. We have a good time. We work hard. We train. My battalion chief, his favorite motto, we get to, right? We chose a job, we get to, no matter if it's stub toe, 2 o'clock in the morning, or ripping structure fire at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We get to do the best job in the world. And that's what we try to convey to all of our new younger firefighters is, hey, no matter how crappy it can get, this is still the best job in the world. Enjoy it and have fun. If you're not having fun, start looking at a different profession.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. And I get the whole admin versus the boots on the ground, banter, but at the end of the day, you were 100%, we're not always going to agree with what our administration is doing, but if you let it get to the point where this is for an example. Let's just say they switch the color of your uniform from white to gray, and you let that affect your entire shift, your mindset. When you're negative, it just brings everybody else down. Nobody wants to do anything. And it just becomes, like you said, toxic. And at some point, we need to understand we're not always going to agree with what administration does, but administration isn't working at your firehouse. So, like, control what you can control. I've learned that myself. Like, I used to let the little things, like, why are they doing this? Why? But at the end of the day, it's like, bro, worry about what you can do. Try to make your shift better, because if everyone's happy, if everybody's involved, number one, it makes your shift go by faster, and no one's griping over the mundane bullshit.
Well, and that's the problem is that, the admin and city council we had before, they're kind of calling all the shots on everything. And there's a lot of negative stuff that happened before I got hired to where they didn't trust anything the admin said. And our SOGs and SOPs that we had didn't coincide with how we actually did incidents. Like we just, I restructure fired, right? It was different. But our SOGs were totally opposite of what we actually were supposed to do on a structure fire. And that comes from, chiefs who maybe not had a lot of experience online to where they've been more chiefs than anything else or forgot what it's like being a firefighter. So we have to do what's best for us and for the customers, right? And for the citizens. But at the same time, we also have policies that we have to follow. So At the time, our shift, which was A shift at the time, we had all the young guys who were go-getters train. We train all night. We train till 10, 11 o'clock at night, forcing doors, pulling hose, everything. And our battalion chief at the time, we'd call him Widgets. He'd have little projects, busy work to keep us busy, right? Because he wanted the chiefs to get off our back. So we did little projects here and there. But as soon as those chiefs left and retired, we got a new fire chief from California. He was awesome. He just retired. He was there for about 3 years, which in turn, we had a lot of ups and downs. We lost one of our train chiefs. He died on line of duty. He had a heart attack at home, and our crews went on him. So after he passed away, our department was at a pretty low, right? He was well respected, well known in the whole state. Everybody knew Chief Johnson, or at the time his name was Trotsky, but everybody knew him. So our department was at a low. And so our new fire chief kind of had to bring morale back up to where it was. And then so we started hiring a new operation chief from Utah. And then we hired our admin chief from Oregon, to where we have young, fresh blood in there who have been firefighters, who are aggressive, want to get after it and do the job, right? And they know and expect a lot from us, and we know what they expect as well. And ever since then, our morale has been at the highest it's ever been. And now that our new admin chief became fire chief, it's just that much better.
Okay. Well, I'd love to hear that. Caldwell's kind of on the uphill side, going up, trying to get everything else up there to
Big time.
par, you know? So that's awesome. It's awesome to
Yeah,
hear.
we just hired a new training chief from Glendale, California. He's big on training. He is creating a whole training city. By the time he's done, if he could get it all done, we just acquired 5 acres at our training grounds. He wants to build a whole city with one story burn props, two story burn props, two story with walkout basements, possible crane derailment, train derailments, four-way intersections with power lines for aerial spotting, for apparatus spotting, to where you could, in every burn box, you could just burn in any room. So that way, and that you could change them around. Our training division just went to Fire Department Training Network to the class to learn how to build those props. So that way, we could do a company performance standard for our whole shift. They'll light one room off and not tell us what it is until we're on scene. So we can't pre-game that plan. But him and I have been working together for the conference to where his goal, and it helped me out a lot, is host the whole thing in Caldwell by the time we're said and done. We'll have classrooms, we'll have a training building, we'll have multiple burn props to where we can have multiple burn classes, and we'll have plenty of space.
Okay. With that being said, I want to ask you, how did two questions? How and why did you start developing the March Mayhem Conference?
We'll say why first. And so at the time, around 2021, is when I took over as a Treasure Valley Fools president. And we have in our valley a lot of good firefighters, like some of the best. A lot of people have heard Brothers in Battle. A third of their cadre work in our area with James Greenwood with Boise Fire, and Brock with Meridian, and all the guys from Eagle, to where we have everything right here. Why do we need to pay hundreds and thousands of dollars to go to different conferences, right? Boise Fire does a symposium every year. That's good. But at the time, because of COVID, they weren't doing it. And Firemanship Conference in Portland just ended. And so there is really not a whole lot in the Pacific Northwest, right? And so I was like, all right, it'd be cool to bring training here and showcase not just, one department in the valley, but every department, right? Because every department out here has their pros and cons, but they're all fantastic, right? Their admins are all good. And so I figured out, I was like, all right, how do I create a training to where I can bring everybody here? Well, it just fell in my lap one day. I was on Instagram. Mutual friend of mine, and so one of the guys I work with, his name is Drew. He runs an Instagram page called Fire Reviews, and he helped open bail with Blake. And so him and I were working together, and we're sitting there, and we got tagged in a post from a friend of mine from California, and I saw this guy. He was captain at the time, Jason Fulmer. He runs Ambassadors of the Craft, and he was in Caldwell visiting family. And so our friend tagged both of us, "Hey, well, while you're out there, why don't you go visit these guys?" And so I reached out to Jason, and we talked. And he's like, "Man, I'd love to do training in Idaho." I was like, "Well, you're talking to the right guy. I do Treasure by Fools. We could do a training. Let's figure it out." And so him and I created. I was like, "Well, what kind of name should we get? So let's do the training in March because the weather's pretty decent out here in Idaho. But once it gets later in the year, California guys won't be able to come because of wildfires and Oregon and stuff." So we did March, and the Boise Symposium is usually in June. So I'm like, "Well, give us a little time in between both." And so the first year, he got me hooked up with Kyle Romagus from Texas, and then him and another guy from California, and we did a 3-day conference. So Kyle did the lecture all day one, and then the next 2 days were all hands-on, including live fire updates on the last day. And we had 45 students total between the 3 days, mainly local with a group from Northern Idaho, and that's about it. And we had a local fire captain come out and just do a quick video for me. And that kind of started taking off from there. Power of social media was fantastic. And so then I started kind of, I was like, "All right, I'm getting a lot of good feedback from this. I want to do this again, but maybe add another class." Well, right at that time is when our training chief passed away. And so we had a funeral. And at the funeral, there was a videographer and a photographer in the area. And they reached out to me on Treasure Valley Fool's page and said, "Hey, we do photography. We have some photos from the funeral we want to give your crews." And so I got with them, and they now are creating my media team. And so we started creating more videos to where now our videos are some of the best out there. And so we went from 45 students to, I think we had 140 the second year. We added a couple more classes. And then I was like, "Man, we're selling out classes left and right." I was like, let's keep adding on to it." And so then we started adding more instructors and more classes, more live fire classes, to where our fourth year this year, we had almost 500 students from Canada and 16 states attend. So it and I now instead of just doing one site, which at the time Nampa Fire hosted our conference. To where now I'm doing Nampa, Middleton Star, and Caldwell hosting classes. And I was like, "Man, this is getting huge." To where now other departments were like, "Hey, can we be a part of this as well?" And that's all we're trying to do is it helped. Like when we hosted Caldwell and all the students that come there, like, "Man, this is pretty cool training grounds." Like it's old, it's kind of dilapidated, but we burn out there. Like our conics boxes get hot. And so a lot of people are like, "Hey, are you guys hiring?" And to where it helped our recruitment numbers, where we used to get maybe 20, 30 people applied to where we had 150 this last round. And so it helps, right? And so I told Nampa, "Hey, it's helping with recruitment numbers." It helped them. MidStar said it helped them as well. And so now Meridian was like, "Hey, can we get involved?" So that's all we're trying to do is showcase the valley, right? And I don't do this for money. I don't get paid for it. I do it because their reaction is, "Man, I learned so much. I had such a great time. I told all my coworkers," and then seeing them come back with more coworkers makes me happy to see that their department is being progressive at it and want to get better for their citizens. And that's how I get paid is happiness, right? Is seeing them happy, it makes me happy. And so I make this conference like I would like to see a conference. So when we do lecture, we kind of keep it open, lively, everyone's having a good time. And at lunchtime, I pick a place to where we have a bar. So that way guys can have a beer and talk firemen and stuff. Because when it comes down to it, firemen love to drink, but at the same time, the conversations just get more intense and get more exciting just listening to people talk. And so that's why I'm like, I want to start doing that. And it's been fantastic ever since.
That's awesome, man. I mean, starting from 45 to over 500, that speaks volumes right there.
It's wild. And so like a lot of these big conferences like the Firemanship and MAHA and MAFC and Pacific Northwest, they have like 60, 70 people working behind scenes. I have like four. It's me, my media director, and then I have one or two of the local guys from our board kind of help out like the day of. But at the end of the day, planning and everything's just me and my media director. And we do sponsors, we do everything. So this year we tried something different. And I said, hey, I want to do a call for presenters. I want to see who wants to come. Everyone's heard about March Mayhem at this point. Everyone's reached out. I want to see who wants to come teach. Right now, I have, as of this morning, 44 classes submitted for different lectures and hands-on. It's pretty awesome to see. So usually I have to reach out and do all the legwork. Now I want to see who wants to come out here and kind of get a different variety.
Yeah. Now, I always like to ask individuals that create conferences, for the betterment of the fire service. So, what would be your advice to anyone else that may not work for a huge municipality, but may work for a department your size that are like, hey, I want to do that. What would be your advice to them?
Start small, right? Don't go swinging for the fences right away, right? Start with one class. Do one presenter for lectures and one class, and see how that works for you for behind the scenes as well as for the students, right? Because you can throw as many people out there as you want, but if it's all crappy, then they're going to have a terrible time to where they're not going to want to come back, right? And so you want to kind of balance, have a good balance. And so start small, work your way up. Get connection, ask questions. I've always told people if they have questions, reach out to me. I'm an open book. I'll help out as much as I can. Since we've started March Mayhem, I've also helped start three new Fools chapters in our region and revamp two other ones because of they've seen the how much fun that we're having to where now they want to spread it to their area. And so it's been pretty cool to see, leaving that as because my term is up next month, and so I'm going to focus on the conference. I'm going to pass it on to somebody who wants to keep running with the Fools. I'll stay a member, but yeah, the conference has come with me, and see where it goes from there.
One of my questions I always like to ask the guests, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to know your answer, but what
Okay.
is your take on outside training? And for members to get outside of their department, I'll say that again, for members to get outside of their department and see and learn other ways.
Yep, 100% agree with it. Not because I teach for a cadre that we go across the nation and teach and stuff. It's better for you, for your citizens that you serve, and for your crew, right? Is it's not going to be the right way to do stuff. It's just more tools for the toolbox. And so, like we just taught a class a couple weeks ago in Southern Idaho, where we were teaching coupling drops. Some people call it bundle drops. But then day, you're dropping a coupling off the second story railing. And a lot of people in that class were never taught that. And they work for small rural departments that, like, well, we don't really do that very often. But just teaching that one thing, one little nugget, you go back, hey, I learned this. Hey, let's check this out. And so it betters, and then your crew will go out and train on it if at least you have a company officer who's willing to do so. That's another hard part too, is there's a lot of senior captains who, oh yeah, you just went to this new training and I'm gonna go pull hose, do the clamp slide. Yeah, okay, we don't do that, right? And so there's that balance, right? And so it doesn't mean if your crew, if your captain doesn't want to do it, that's a leadership issue at that point. But at the same time, go back and at least teach one person, right? It doesn't have to be on your crew, it can be on your shift, right? And you can go out and pull hose in the bay. Right, we have extra hose in all the stations. You have the apparatus there, right? Pull hose. We have forced entry props at all of our stations as well. Go force the door. Go grab a ladder, throw a ladder. Right? It's you don't have to just because your captain says no doesn't mean now. Okay, I'm just not going to train. Right? And so the outside training is nice because those extra tools. Like, well, I learned how to do forced entry this way. Let me try this method. Or, hey, I'm going to try zero visibility force entry because I just took a class on it a couple weeks ago. I want to see how it works real life for us. And so it helps. We teach all of our students, like, just have fun. You don't need to take every single thing back if you've never seen it before. Just take one thing. Start with one thing and work your way back. If you have already learned it, cool. Now it's time to perfect it, right? And so maybe you've went to a VES class and you already know how to VES, you've done it 100 times. Cool. It doesn't mean you're perfect at it. None of us are perfect at any position that we do. And so once you take that outside training, you're like, okay, I'm gonna keep doing it this way and see if it works better for me. Because every person's built differently. Every person has their strengths and weaknesses. So one way is not gonna work for everybody. So that's kind of what we push for the outside training is just learn one nugget, and or if you've already learned it and you know everything, perfect it.
No, for sure. I love it. Okay. With that being said, what kind of realistic training as a captain do you do for the members when you're on shift?
So we so our tower, our training division's kind of nice. So our training captain is actually on my cadre for the nation. And so he lets us kind of, hey, whatever you guys want to do at training grounds, just make sure you don't make a mess, right? So we have multiple smoke machines there. We have barrels with a bunch of hay. So we'll light hay smoke to make it right. Smoke machines are good for when you're practicing searching where you have zero visibility, but it's not realistic, right? It's the hay smoke and real smoke is different than fake smoke. And so I try and do a combination of both just to let our newer guys and even our more senior guys get those reps of the realistic stuff. And so Facebook Marketplace is an awesome place to get cheap stuff. So we'll get free furniture on Facebook Marketplace or free bales of hay. Or free materials just to we could build a window prop, right? For VES to where you're not simulating, you're actually handing out a like basically like a plexiglass type window with wood and sashes and stuff. We put mannequins in the corner. Like one of the trainings we did is we did VES and I put multiple victims all over the second floor and we had two of our firefighters going zero vis, plus we masked them or covered them up. Find them, and you don't leave until you find them all. And we told them how many there were, and they went for it. And so, right, that's not realistic. Sometimes you'll be like, "Oh, there's two victims on the second floor." Sometimes you don't know if anyone's in there. But this one was, I wanted them to know that there's this many victims. I want you to find them every single one. And there's some that I hid that were hard, and it one of them almost went through his whole bottle. They're searching for about 20 minutes. Till they found all of them. And it was a big second floor. We had multiple furnitures and walls and collapsible, like we had all sorts of stuff. And so we try and do a live fire on our shift at least once a month. Just a small one. It does have to be a huge rock and roll in one. We'll light a barrel and go, right? And the big realistic ones that I do that are free is we'll go to houses in our neighborhood and pull and simulate a structure fire in that house. It's nice that a lot of our members live in that area. I don't. I live about 20 minutes from Caldwell, but like last rotation, we have a probie, lateral probie, and he's like, "Hey, I just want to get reps on pulling hose." Perfect. One of our other firefighters on the engine, he lived around the corner, and his sister lived down the street, so we went to his sister's house, and before we went to his house too, I said, "All right." Showing up on a single story, single family residence, we have a working fire on the, Bravo Charlie corner. Give me hose to the front door. And it was a short offset, so he had to figure it out. And he learned when he stretched hose to the front door, he had too much hose, right? It's like a 1600 square foot house, but he brought all the hose with him in that narrow doorway to where no one else could really get access. And so when we were done, we loaded up, we talked about it. Then I have a senior firefighter who's been on for 2 years. I said, "Hey, stretch hose with a short offset and show him a different way." So that way he had multiple options for future to think about. And you saw something click. As soon as we did it, we went back and he practiced on our little hose pulling rack that we had. And he was like, "Okay, now I have a better understanding on a short offset why I don't need so much hose with me." It's like, all you need is 50 feet at the door, right? So a coupling nozzle, we're good. Everything else, if you have a front yard, use the space. So I like to use realistic houses in our neighborhood in our first two, right? Because if we're gonna have a fire, it's gonna be one of those type houses. A training tower is good for practicing the basic fundamentals, throwing a ladder, VES, stuff like that. But stretching a hose to a front door of a real house or a real structure is priceless.
No, that's a fact. I mean, there's no better way of getting in the reps than actually going out there and doing it. And a lot of people will make fun of, flowing and moving in an open parking lot. But to me, there's a time and a place where, you crawl, walk, run. And for the crawling stage, yeah, absolutely. Use an open parking lot. And then when you're ready to walk stage, we'll start adding a couple obstacles. And then when we're ready to go full, like we'll do it in an area like apartment complexes, cars are out parked, different areas. Like there's a time and a place for every sort of training that you just mentioned. And I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then like Kyle Rabagus, he's a good friend of mine. He does the I smell smoke drill when he was on the engine. To where you're driving, you can be coming back from a grocery store, come back from a call, and say, "Hey, I smell a smoke coming from that business or that structure." Pull over, you suit up, and you stretch a line. You simulate a structure fire at that house. It's kind of spur of the moment. You're not prepared for it. You're not mentally prepared for it. Let's see how you do. And then, so I like to do that every now and then to kind of throw them off their game. It could be 11 o'clock at night. It could be 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I always tell my guys, expect the unexpected, right? You have to stay ready so you don't have to get ready. And so that's what our crew does. Especially when I float around too, a lot of the guys love when I come over because I just like to have fun. And we go out and train. Sometimes their captains, may have other things that they have to do to where they can't go out and train as much. And so when I get there, I'm like the substitute teacher. All right, cool. What do you guys want to do today? Let's go train. Sweet. All right, I'm down. So everybody on our shift knows that I love to train. One of our other cadre members from our staff, we have 4 people in our department that work, teach with Ambassadors of the Craft. Two of them, me and another guy on our shift. We're both captains on our shift. So usually we'll get our engines together and we'll do joint trainings. And so we just like to have a good time.
Now, you mentioned you have 4 engines and a truck. With your department, is it apparatus specific, or is the truck doing just straight truck work, or can they do engine work if they arrive there first?
No, we so we took out so our truck we bought you well it was almost new. It had 6,000 miles on it. It has a pump, but we got rid of all the hose on it and we treat it strictly a truck. The equipment on that thing is phenomenal. They just did a whole aerial photo of everything we carry. It's awesome. They just spec'd out a tiller too, so we'll be getting a tiller here in the next 4 years or so. But our truck, strictly a truck. When they get on scene, if I'm first arriving captain, I don't tell the truck what to do. Unless if I see something specific, like, hey, I really need this done. We still do blue card. We're getting away from that here soon. But the first arriving engine, first arriving truck in BC, are the only ones that go straight to scene. Everyone else level one stage of the hydrant, right? So the first arriving truck, they get there. That captain is, hey, truck 11's on scene, and we're splitting. We're going all in search or all out vet, whatever. But that captain tells me what they're doing. Because at the end of the day, it's their responsibility to know their limitations and their crew limitations on what to do. Having a truck background, I know what they're going to be doing and I know what they expect. So I'm totally fine with it. And so there's some guys that have never had a truck. Like we just got our truck in service 2 years ago. We never had a full truck company until then. And so some guys are still getting that grasp and that understanding on what a truck actually does. But yeah, our engines are strictly, first arriving is fire attack usually. Second engine, either a booster backup with basically a relay pump from the second engine, the first engine, or grabbing a hydrant and then grabbing a 2 outline. Third engine is goes on deck. Just so that way we get everybody right then and there. Our BC wants to start doing kind of what Nick Martin does is every fire alarm that comes in, every structure fire, possible structure fire, every crew is pulling a hose until we determine it's not a real thing, right? Treat every fire like it's a real fire with victims trapped. And so our BC is very aggressive when it comes to that, and he wants us to all do it, and I'm 100% on game for it because the most realistic reps you're going to get is when it's game time, right? And so if you treat it that, you're going to get some great reps. So yeah, our engines go to work, and then our truck crew will vent and search usually 90% of the time, unless if we see call an audible. But usually then they kind of catch on board and do their own thing.
I'm going to ask you a question. Only answer it if you want to, but I want to have a conversation. about this.
Let's do
So
it.
you just mentioned that your department's going away from blue card. My department currently does blue card. So I just want to ask you one-on-one, what is y'all's reasoning for moving away from blue card?
So blue card is good when it comes to the fundamentals, right, of a size up, right? Kind of what you want to look for. But it's very mundane. It's very like robotic, right? It's engine one's on scene. We have a, two-story single family residence, right? You're talking a lot on the radio, right? To where you may not hit, you may not need to say every single thing. And then, engine two's level one, right, at the hydrant. We all know the second engine needs to get water supply, right? That's a given for 90% of the fires. If not, booster back up with the second engine. It's totally fine. The blue card is not realistic for a lot of our fires, a lot of our houses. And because we don't get a lot of apparatus at our incidents, our first arriving in, we get three engines, a truck, and a BC. 311 is what we get on initial structure fire assignment. After that, we do a working fire assignment where we get either an engine and truck or two engines, right? And it's all AVL from there. So with blue card, it's good for to get a better understanding. Like when I was never a captain, when I did blue card first, okay, now I see what you guys are looking for as a size up. But at the end of the day, now doing it a little bit, I'm like, okay, we're gonna take bits and pieces for blue card. And we're also going to take bits and pieces from Anthony Castro's Calm the Chaos. We just did a trainer for him. So we're going to take a little bit of both, right? And so that way we match it to what our department needs are. And I think it's going to be awesome. Castro's class, if you've never taken it, it's phenomenal. His PowerPoint's great. His class, his delivery's great. And what's nice is I came from that system. He worked for Sacramento Metro Fire, which was a neighborhood agency for city to where they ran exactly how we did. So I know exactly how it runs. So it kind of brings me back to the old days, 10 years ago, where now I feel, okay, I'm back to where I was, where I started. But blue card's not for everybody. A lot of people hate blue card. They say it's, money scheme, whatever. At the end of the day, it's good foundational skills to do for size ups. And then from there, could take it to how your department sees fit.
No, absolutely. And I wanted to hear your take on it. That's not a shot at blue card, but I will say, in my own opinion, I 100% agree with you do with when it comes to the autonomy, how it's like you're reading a script every single time. Enter through alpha, enter through alpha, enter through alpha. And so I'm not a PhD doctor, but I can say when you continuously read a script a certain way, when you get to the fire ground, your automatic response is, hey, I have to go through alpha, when maybe the Charlie side is the easier side to go to, or the Bravo side. But because we hammer that in these officers' heads, enter through alpha, enter through alpha, enter through alpha, it creates that. And not always, because you do have some captains who are like, oh, a freaking Bravo is a lot easier. Hey, we're gonna redeploy to the Bravo side. But for most officers, that's all they know. It's like the automatic response. So that's where I feel like blue card is a hindrance, because it doesn't allow, I don't want to say it doesn't, but the way you're programmed, some officers are tunnel visioned in a way where it's like, hey, we always got to go in this way. We always got to do it this way. And other crews responding are going to always go, I guarantee he's going to say, nothing showing, 360 is complete, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, all right, what happens when he rolls up and he's like, I got smoke and flame showing? It's like, oh shit, like, what did he just say? You know what I mean? So that's just my
Yeah, and
take.
well, and then the one thing that's funny too is like the address on blue card is always Main Street, right? So you're on Main Street Command. And it's happened a couple times where they just got done blue card like earlier that day, and then they get a fire like, oh, well, engine level will be Main Street Command. I'm like, okay, you're nowhere near Main Street, but that's cool. So when we first started changing it, is we started picking addresses in our area. So like, 622 West Logan, right? Just to pick a random street, so that way we're not getting that habit on saying Main Street every single time. And the another big one too is blue card covers structure fires, right? And they always say, oh, this should be defensive. You should, not go interior where there's a little bit of flames, a lot of searchable space, a lot of occupational space going in to where, okay, not realistic for most people, especially aggressive department. If we see searchable space, we're going in, right? And so there's good and bads on every program.
Right,
And that's,
absolutely.
and another one too, blue card is they talk about structure fire, but they don't talk about vehicle accidents. Like, what's your size of a vehicle accident? It's like, okay, I guess I'll start saying this. And so we started kind of following a blue card method for vehicle accidents too, to where now we've shortened it down to where just what do you actually have? I have two cars, major damage. We'll check and advise on injuries. Just keep it simple, right? You don't need to say upright on all four wheels. We have major damage, one car. Like, no, keep it simple, short, sweet, right to the point. And we started doing that to where it's less radio traffic and more actions, right? Get it done. And it's been nice.
No, awesome. Awesome. And yes, I have heard of Anthony Castros. Definitely, I've loved watching his videos when he does, when he's in command. And definitely, I've heard him talk on a couple other podcasts. And one of the things about it is he's always learning. He's always striving to be a better version of himself and definitely assisting other departments in learning. Like, yes, it's chaos. Like, we get called when shit's hitting the fan. Like, it's bad. But when we show up, we need to act like, okay, we've been here before. Cool, calm, collective. I've said it before in other interviews and definitely with other people I talk to, how the first due officer gives his size up sets the tone for the rest of the operation. If he's screaming, if he or she's screaming on the radio, then it's like you're gonna get everyone else amped up. But if you're cool, calm, collected, like you've been there before, take a breath and just do what you gotta go do.
I'll completely admit my first structure fires the size of as a captain was absolute shit show. I was covering N11 downtown, and the driver on there replaced me as a driver, and he drives a lead foot, right? And so we had a fire. It was around the border station one, station two's area, and we had our HR, new HR director, touring the station, and our admin assistant touring the station with her. Came in, they're like, hey, can we jump with you? So I had two firefighters in the back seat, me, the driver, plus these two additionals. So I had six people in the engine, and we're hauling ass down the road. And I'm trying to figure out, okay, I gotta get my pack out, get my radio. Yeah, I'm on the right channel. I'm trying to find a hydrant this time, but he's going so fast. I look up, I'm like, oh shit, we're already here, and we just beat the engine their first due. And so I see light smoke coming out, and so I say, we'll be out investigating, do the whole size up. And then as soon as I get out, I'm trying to get out. My pack gets stuck in the seat. I'm tangled up in the seat belt. I throw the SCBA down, trying to get out. This time I have two newer firefighters like, hey, we have heavy smoke to the floor. I'm like, all right, we got a working fire now. So I'm running around trying to do a 360. Gates are locked. There's big ass dogs in the backyard. And I'm just flustered at this point. I'm already behind the curve because everything started snowballing. BC's right on my ass, and then the ops chief shows up because he hears a working fire. The fire marshal shows up, everybody's there. And then we find out, and then so I start masking up. We go inside. And it's a duplex, it's a single-story duplex, and the hose line goes to the back bedrooms. And I'm like, well, this is light, wispy smoke coming out. This is not heavy smoke to the floor. Like Corbin, so he's a firefighter he's from Canada. So I'm like, maybe he's learning Canadian terms rather than American terms. And so he goes to the back bedroom, and I walk into the kitchen, and it's a pot smoking. So I turn the stove off, I take the pot outside, I throw it outside, fires out. Like, there's no fire, it's just a pot smoking. And everybody was, oh, you got a working fire? Oh, you should have called a second alarm. Like, just give me crap for it. And so me and the BC kind of came up with a plan, like, for now on, maybe not get off the rig with your pack, right? Take a second, pull it out, get down, put your pack on while you're sizing up the house yourself. Don't take the words of your firefighters, because they may be all amped up to where they have tunnel vision. And ever since then, it's worked great for me. Just take it slow to save a few minutes, right? And but yeah, it was an absolute clusterfuck.
Hey, but you know what? It happens. You learn from it, you move on.
Exactly. And so it was definitely a good learning experience for sure, and definitely pass that on to younger guys. Like, hey, if the captain asks you what you got going on, if you see smoke, don't say, unless if it's heavy black turbulent smoke pumping out, don't say heavy smoke. Just say, hey, we got smoke. Okay, perfect. Because heavy smoke to me could be different to heavy smoke to you, to everybody else. And
Right.
so unless if it's black turbulent smoke pumping out all the way from the floor, don't say we have heavy smoke.
Yeah, no, 100%, 100%. Okay. I'm going to ask you, in your opinion, what do you think the fire service is doing good on, and what can they improve on when it comes to recruitment and retention?
So recruitment and retention, the fire service is doing good, right? Using social media as much as can. The downside of that is some of the social media is very tacky, very corny. Like, okay, do I really want to go work for that department who does sweet TikTok videos? Like, right? And so there's a good and bad with social media. A lot of big departments don't do big social media posts, right? They don't do sweet videos and music and all this because their history precedes them. The smaller departments are having trouble with recruitment retention. Actually, every department is because of the younger generation, right? The newer generation, they don't really want to work. They don't want to, they're not interested in, going after the fire and being aggressive and have a good time. A lot of them are more worried about how much money do I get paid? What are the benefits like? Stuff like that, right? That's always important if you have a family. That I totally get that. But at the end of the day, that's not what it's about, right? I took a pay cut when I had left California to come to Idaho because I wanted job satisfaction. And so when it comes to retention, right, we have to try and keep our members. So the admin, it starts with the admin, is how do we keep our members? How do we keep them happy? How do we keep morale high? And so by basically being dictators, you're not making your crews happy. And so there's some chiefs out there that are like, I'm ruling with iron fist. This is what we're going to do if you like it or not. Problem with them is their retention is very low and they're recruiting all the time because they can't keep their people. Where there's other departments that might be growing, but their chiefs are like, hey, what do you guys want to see? What do you like? Our tiller, our crews are like, hey, this would be cool to have because we have a lot of narrow streets in downtown Caldwell. A tiller would be awesome. And our chief's like, sweet, let's start, creating one. And so if you keep morale high and basically the chiefs get your opinion and actually use it, not like, oh, okay, I'll listen to you, but just still go their own way. But if they actually listen to your ideas and go with it, your morale is going to be so much higher to where people are going to want to work there. People are going to want to stay there for their careers. And then in turn, them talking happy about their department spreads to people that who may come do a ride along, right? We've been having a lot of ride alongs lately because we're hiring so much firefighters because we're expanding positions. And so they're like, what do you like about Caldwell? Like, what isn't there like, right? Like we have a great time. We have great staff. We have a great train division, great admin. We have great line personnel. Everyone gets along great. And we love to have fun, fight fires, train. And we don't have a recruitment video yet. We're working on it. But same time as word of mouth, right? Is if we talk positive about it, that positivity is going to spread off on everybody else. So the fire service with retention, right, is there's paper chiefs and working chiefs, right? And the paper chiefs are the guys who want to move up the ranks real fast. It's their way or the highway. Where the working chiefs are like, I came from that level. I'm never going to forget where I came from. How do we improve that, right? And so that is a good and bad for both retention and recruitment for the fire service. I think social media is doing good and bad on both, right? Like we talked about earlier. So I think at the end of the day, if departments created a better morale and positivity around the department, I think their retention numbers will go higher, recruitment numbers will go higher. That's happy, like we all hear the motto, happy wife, happy life, right? It's the same thing at work. Happy department, everyone's gonna love coming to work. Like I love going to work every day. So
And there's no bigger recruitment tool than your own members. You know what I mean? And
Right.
I think some departments are losing sight of that. If your members are happy, they will do the recruiting for you.
Yep, and that's what we told our chief, like when we so when I teach with Ambassadors of Craft, we go out, like we went to MAFSE the last couple of years, and when we go out, everyone's like, "Oh, where do you work?" "Oh, I work for Caldwell." "Oh, where's that?" And so we start talking about it, and they could just see the passion, the happiness in our, our reaction to that, where it was like, "Okay, maybe I should start looking into that." We just hired a guy from North Carolina, from Raleigh. He's now my firefighter. And so it spreads, that positivity spreads no matter where you go, right? And so when we go out and teach, I love showcasing Caldwell. It's great, right? And I take pride in my department, right? If I didn't take pride in it, I wouldn't be bragging about it, right? And so I help make a difference to where it's at now, and I'm taking pride in it, and I'm going forward.
No, absolutely. Okay. Wellness, the brotherhood aspect of the fire service. What's your take on what it truly means to be there for each other?
So I picked this question. This one hits home. So the fire service, right, is like we talked about earlier, when I used to go camping with, dad's coworkers, all their sons now are firefighters, right? And so we all used to go out and have fun, and it's a good time. That's what it should be like. When the fire service talks, they talk negative about each other, talk crap about each other, like, "Oh, this guy's, piece of shit," whatever. It doesn't do any justice for our fire service, right? But at the end of the day, our brotherhood, sisterhood, when they come together, it means a lot. So, if I get choked up, I apologize. So, 2020, everyone knows COVID hit, right? And so it was pretty crappy for a lot of people. 2020 was probably the worst year of my life. So me and my wife were expecting twin girls in July of 2020. And March of 2020, her grandfather died. First family death she's had. So it kind of hit her. A couple of weeks later, our girl, she went into labor 15 weeks early. So our girls were born 15 weeks early. One of our girls passed away from brain bleed 3 days after birth. The other one was in the NICU for 104 days, all during COVID. And so going the COVID policy for the hospital is we had one parent per day, right? So some days I couldn't go, and so we took turns. At the same time, I couldn't, I was in a dark spot, right? I just lost my daughter. My other one's fighting for her life. So it was tough. Obviously wanted to go to alcohol. I wanted to kind of just stay in my own place, but the brotherhood was unfucking real when it came to this. The weekend that they were born, one of the captains who just retired from Caldwell, probably a couple months earlier, it was around Easter time, brought me a full Easter dinner, prime rib, potatoes, vegetables, whole nine yards. Said, "Hey, you're going through some shit. I don't want you and your wife cooking. Here's some food." I had guys volunteer to work for me and didn't want me to pay them back. Like, "Hey, we'll cover you. Take some time. Be with your wife. We got it." So seeing that was huge, right? Even our fire chief reached out to me. Our mayor at the time, he lost one of his kids. He reached out to me and he called me for about a half hour. It was big to see everyone come together for, a shitty reason to help a brother out. And so when she got out of NICU 3.5 months later, I was going to take, a month off. I saved up all my, PTO and all that. But guys like, "No, save your PTO. We'll work for you. Don't worry about it." And so I ended up taking like 2.5 months off to stay home with my daughter and my wife. She came home on auction for two and a half months. Got off auction. She's now doing phenomenally fantastic. Like, she's perfectly healthy, and thriving. So when we're there for each other, right, we got to be there for each other. We at the end of the day, we can't talk shit about each other. We have to help each other out, right? It's a brother sisterhood, right? We're there. We're a family. We live with each other for a third of our lives. So when someone's in need, we got to help them, right? If you see someone, not doing well, right, you can just tell they're kind of off. Talk to them, pull them aside. "Hey, what's going on? And then if they so just say, hey, talk to me. Like, I know something's going on. I'm here for you. Whenever you're ready, come talk to me. We had one of our guys having trouble with his wife. And I pulled him in the office. I'm like, hey, what's going on with you? Like, you seem off. And so he broke down and told me everything. And so at the end of the day, we just got to be there for each other, right? We got to help each other out. And if someone's struggling, if you're struggling, reach out to somebody. It doesn't have to be a therapist. It doesn't have to be a doctor. Reach out to one of your brothers and sisters in the firehouse, right? I reach out to some of my friends that I don't work with that are firefighters, that because they still understand it, but maybe they have a different perspective because they don't work at my department. Reach out to somebody. If anybody who's listening to this, if you're having trouble, there's NextRung. NextRung is a fantastic thing to talk about. Hell, reach out to me on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, whatever. I'll talk to you all day. I don't care. We're there for each other, right? And so that's what I feel like the brotherhood is taking care of, brother sisterhood is taking care of each other.
No, I mean that's pretty much what it's about. And for me though, it shouldn't take a line of duty, some sort of freak accident, or it shouldn't, like, to me, it shouldn't take some sort of a grievance event to make everybody come together. Like, we should celebrate our wins. Yes, there's always going to be people in the fire service that you're not going to like. I'm not going to sugarcoat
Right.
it. I mean,
No,
it is
absolutely.
what it is. You're gonna have your people that are using the title and the rank for their well-being, and they don't care about helping anybody else. Those are the individuals I try to stay away from. But we can't keep tearing the ones who are trying to better themselves. And if they fail, it's like, no, don't laugh in their face. Go, hey, man, this is what you can do to improve in this area or that. Like, we gotta help each other out. The whole, you mentioned earlier, the whole clique thing, that is real. Like, to me, that reminds me of high school. The fire service is like high school.
Very, very much so.
You have your jocks and then you have your nerds. And if you're not part of this clique, then you're an outcast and whatever the case may be. I don't want to be a jock. I want to be a person that anybody can come talk to me and I can go talk to them. What I do, I stay in my lane. I don't necessarily hang out with the jocks, and I'm by myself. I'm a loner. You know what I mean? Like, I'll talk to whoever I want to talk to, but don't change yourself. Don't become that firefighter that shits on another firefighter so you could be cool with the popular people. Like, don't do that. And that's where I feel like we fall short.
Right, absolutely, and that's happening more and more frequently, right? And instead of bashing each other, just like you said, prop each other up, like give each other props. Biggest thing too is not just them, their families too, right? Get their families involved, because at the end of the day, they're gone from their families as well for through their life. So like I always tell my wife and daughter, if you guys want to come by the station anytime, come by. And my daughter loves climbing the engine. She hates sitting in the captain seat. I don't know why, but she likes sitting in the driver's seat and stuff. But at the end of the day, she loves coming to the station just to hang out with me. And if like I had a shitty call where I had a whole family get killed, train versus truck, and it hit me hard, right? Because they had two kids in there. And so right afterwards, I called my wife. I was like, "Hey, what are you guys doing?" And so we were doing a boot drive, so they came by and helped with the boot drive for a couple hours. And just having them there kind of just calmed me down and cheered me up. And so we got to get families involved too. And just stop shitting on each other is all it is. And there's tons of social media posts out there where, oh, the volunteer firefighters, hit it hard from yard, all stuff, right? At the end of the day, I started as a volunteer, right? I'm not gonna forget my roots. And so we got volunteer firefighters, or if not more important than career firefighters, because a lot of ours, especially back east, they're big. And so we gotta, treat them the same as we're all treating each other, and you don't see that quite often. And so we got to go back to our roots is the fire service, right? We got to be there for one another, treat each other with respect, do the job that we can to do, and don't sugarcoat it. Like, that's all it is.
Definitely. No, for sure. Okay. With that being said, I always like to ask the guests this last question. Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
Down the road, I want to see myself as a training chief, right? Making a difference in the department. Creating a better culture when it comes to training, right? Teaching the younger generation, passing on what I've learned over the years, passing on the new generation. Like, hey, here's some nuggets that, I've learned over the years through trials, tribulations. Here's something that'll help you out down the road. Or it may or may not help you, who knows? But creating that lasting impression on those firefighters who are going to work the next 30 years, 20, 30 years, they'll remember you and what you did in that moment, to where that's what I want to leave my lasting impression on. It's not, creating this great conference or, teaching all over the country. At the end of the day, just passing on that wisdom and knowledge that I've learned that people pass on to me, being an open book, sharing it to somebody else. Don't keep it all to yourself. That's what we're not here for, right? Is we all do the same job. We all fight fire. It doesn't matter what patch you have on your sleeve. We're all firefighters. So at the end of the day, just pass that knowledge on to someone else. If you just affect one person, that one person can spread on to 10 more people, and then 10 more people, and then it'll spread from there to where that's your last impression. Not, oh, he was an asshole and all he did was sit in a recliner all day type thing.
Yeah, no. Okay. And what does the future hold for March Mayhem? What does March Mayhem look like in a couple of years?
I'm hoping March Mayhem is valley wide. Every department host, we have multiple classes. I want to try to bring as many students as I can. So if we get at least two more burn props done by March this year in Caldwell, then we'll have 4 to 5 live fire classes this year, which usually we have 2 to 3. We'll have more classes, more hands-on. Maybe I'll add additional day of lecture. Maybe I'll add more days of hands-on. If we get more and more interest, then I'll keep adding more and more days.
Okay, awesome,
Like,
man.
yeah.
Awesome. I just want to say thanks for coming on. Thank you for taking time out of your day to do this. Thank you for creating a conference for your area. And that's the thing, like, there are so many conferences now than there were back in the day, but there are still some individuals who are like, I can't afford to drive to this or fly to this one. So the fact that you're bringing firemanship to the area that you work in speaks volumes. So thank you for doing that. Continue to do what you got to do. And how can people get in touch with you if they want to be a presenter for your class or talk about bringing different ideas?
So we have Instagram, Facebook, March Mayhem Fire Conference. We have a link on there. We have openings for call for presenters till July 1st. Also, if you want to be a student, if you can't afford it, we'll help you as much as we can, if it may be, pay for one of your classes or stuff. We have, so when I work for Ambassadors of the Craft, go teach, we have a memorial scholarship that we pay for students' registration fees, just so students get, it doesn't have to be a class that we teach, it just be in general, just a class, just we want you to go out and learn. And so we do contests all the time where we give away conference passes. So March Mayhem Fire Conference, you go on there, we'll do a bunch of posts. Ambassador of the Craft, we have an Instagram page as well where we do trainings. We go around the nation. So if you want to do a fundamentals of first do engine or truck, we have classes for that as well. You can reach out to them on their website, AOTCtraining.com, MarchMayhemFireConference.com. We have, tons of social media stuff. So we have a whole media team. If you YouTube, we have videos. If you want to go see one of our previous conferences, go to YouTube, type in March Mayhem Fire Conference, and you'll see the last couple of years pop up. But yeah, if not, Instagram, social media, just reach me on there. I run the pages as well, and so I get the messages, or if not, it gets passed on to me, and I'll make sure we take care of it.
Fantastic. All right. You heard it there. How to get in contact with the man. So, like I said, Gino, thank you. I got to thank Chris Slayer, Chief Slayer. Thank you for putting me on. I appreciate you taking the time coming on and talking shop, man. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's been a great time.
Yes, sir.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.